Muller House Meeting, Saturday morning, 25th September 1976. You may recall one or two of our considerations yesterday regarding the way in which we are constituted. When this universal, unknown, transcendent form of energy which we call mind, pure mind, meets body, then it gives rise to psyche. The psyche is rooted in the physical brain and nerves, the ductus glands and so forth. Do not picture this as some energy coming along and then meeting a body. It all happens together at one and the same time. But when we talk about it, it is impossible to talk about the togetherness all at once. That is why I put it in these terms, that this universal, characterless energy, which is a creative power, brings about, releases what we call psyche in the individual person. And we must never forget the complete oneness of the whole person all the time. Psyche is the link between the brain, the physical brain, and this universal energy, mind. Psyche, although being the link, prevents mind, pure mind, from functioning directly through the brain and the senses from the very start. Get this very clearly. It's not very easy, but we must understand this very clearly. It is psyche which prevents, because psyche is in the state of ignorance. Ignorance as we considered it yesterday afternoon. It is unawake to universal creative energy. It is unawake to God. You know, in the Greek myth, Psyche and Eros, they put it in this form, that Psyche is one of three sisters, the children of a king. And she is very, very beautiful. Therefore, Psyche is mortal. She is not immortal. Psyche is what so many of us through the centuries have believed to be immortal. But the psyche is not immortal. My soul, as I would call it, or my mind, is not immortal. That which is immortal has neither beginning nor end. The psyche has a beginning with the body. So body and psyche are together like that. And psyche, being unawakened, does not let pure mind function directly through the brain and the senses. When does this direct functioning take place? We talked about it yesterday. When the psyche is utterly purified, utterly empty, that means. Not just pure in the ordinary moral sense, that it is truthful, kind, and all the rest of it, and not vicious and so forth, you see. That also, of course, is the starting point. That's just taken for granted. But purified in the sense that it is not filled with the stuff of beliefs, ideas, conceptions, all mental fixations. This is the important point. Psychologists, modern psychologists, understand this business about mental fixation. When the mind gets fixed, when the psyche, that is actually, gets fixed like this, then mind cannot function at all through that. And the organism becomes ill in consequence, psychically, psychologically ill. So the purification of the psyche means freeing the psyche, letting the psyche become free of all these fixations. This is important. When the psyche is freed, as the psyche is freed, pure mind functions more and more directly through the brain and the senses. This is one of the root sources of the kind of inspirations that come to genius. You see, you don't know where it comes from. It comes from heaven, we say, or whatever it is. But the inspiration of genius, and you and I, in our own little way, during our lifetime, get inspiration in the real sense. Because there has been a direct touch with the brain. And if one is observant enough and sensitive enough afterwards to be able to notice it, one will see that that direct touch took place when we were perfectly quiet. The brain was quiet. Because the psyche functioning through the brain is constantly talking. Speech is the instrument which the psyche uses for naming all the different forms that come up through the operation of our senses. For the operation of the memory of the different forms that the sense impressions create in the brain, in the psyche, and in the psyche. Speech is the instrument for all this. So speech is our great card index, so to say, to which we refer when we see something or hear something and so forth. Now all these forms remain in the brain and the psyche uses them constantly, preventing a direct contact with pure mind. Because this is active all the time whilst the body is alive. It doesn't stop. Therefore the brain never stops talking. It is talking even in our sleep. And it is only in those states of profound slumber, deep slumber, dreamless slumber as we call it, that this talking has stopped. Then the psyche, being quiet, and the body being perfectly relaxed and resting and in a rhythmic state, it receives energy, transcendent energy from pure mind, becomes refreshed and recharged with this energy. That is why if you have a really sound, perfect sleep, then you are recharged with energy when you wake up. Now, the brain, in its turn, is the link between psyche and pure mind. Psyche is the link between brain and pure mind, and the brain also is the link between psyche and pure mind. Because it is the nature of the physical brain which determines the particular form and the particular type of activity which the psyche will manifest during one's lifetime. So you see how they are intimately interconnected. This is one of the reasons why the purity of the body and bodily living in everyday life, especially in connection with food and drink and work and rest and exercise and so on, is so important. Because all these make for a pure bloodstream, and a pure bloodstream means a healthy brain physically. Also, the point about exercise and fresh air and light, oxygenation takes place. And where there is proper oxygenation, the brain functions at its peak point. So you see how they interdepend in that manner. So that this purification of the psyche, that is freeing it from being imprisoned by all its beliefs and concepts and so forth, and the purification of the body go together. When this happens, the organism becomes more and more sensitive, and it is, well, like a radio set. It becomes tuned. You can tune it. And then when it gets into tune with pure mind, there is the direct effect, influence of pure mind, this transcendent side of existence, upon the person. And so you get your inspiration. And you live constantly in that state of inspiration, and you live that constantly here and now from moment to moment. It is not a case of that happening, oh, today, tomorrow. It is present all the time. This energy of pure mind is present all the time. We put it yesterday in a different form. The omnipresence of God, which all the religions have talked of, or the omnipresence of pure mind, as in religions like Buddhism and certain aspects of Hinduism, the deeply philosophical aspects. See, it is omnipresent. It is here all the time. And also remember what I said, transcendence never compels. Therefore, it never forces an entry into the organism. Never forces an entry. Insofar as I perform my special duty as a human being, which is this purification and this preparing the organism to be the right instrument for transcendence, insofar as that takes place, mind freely enters. Pure mind freely enters. Remember I said, when I am silent, God speaks. Now you see, my silence means that my sense functions associated with my speech faculty do not take possession of my brain and its activities. The sense functions go on. Sights, sounds, etc., they are all received. The brain can name them, but the brain and the psyche do not cling to them, do not hold hard to what has happened. Because all that happens outwardly, let us say in our ordinary everyday life, is something which the inner creative energy, which is ourselves embodied, is expressing. Expressing means throwing out, pressing out. You don't want to hold that which you press out. You see? Now do you understand why, for instance, the Buddha, in his teaching, said, he who is completely free of all grasping is in the deathless state, the state of immortality. Because you, as the creative power yourself, are awake, constantly awake to this creative process all the time. And you don't hold anything which you create. So you just let it go all the time. And it constantly keeps coming out from within yourself, because your source, your reservoir, is this universal transcendent energy, God itself, Brahman itself, mind itself. Now this is the supreme state of meditation and the supreme meaning of meditation. You'll see at once that all our ordinary techniques of meditation, which involve a verbal process, which involve a process of deliberately directing your thought, not only your attentiveness, which is quite a different thing, but directing your thought in a certain pattern. When you do that, what you are doing actually is to open the cupboards of your memory and all the contents of your memory, which means the contents of the past, which has gone past, it's finished with, it's dead, you see. You just stir it all up and say you're meditating. The thoughts may be very great thoughts, they may be very pleasant, they may be sublime. They may give rise to other thoughts which give you great pleasure and happiness and so forth. But that is not the supreme meaning of meditation. The real meaning of meditation is this state of complete and total communion, in which there is nothing in between mind, pure mind, and the brain, the body itself. You see why, in the past, the people worshipped the perfected holy man as God himself on earth. This was symbolized that way. Now, we as we are not at that state. In that state. So, how do we help to become released into this state? How do we help ourselves to get released into this state? Please remember, released into, out of prison, into this state. Not a case of attaining or achieving. You can say, oh, I want to go to Garmisch this morning. Well, all right, you have determined on something, you go to Garmisch. You are, as a separate individual, in control, in power. But I, as a separate individual, can never be in control, in power, over universal mind. Can I control God? It's totally impossible. It is absolute master over me. It brought this into being and it will take this back into itself. You see the difference? So, it is a case of how do we release ourselves? Now, when we went out walking yesterday morning and we tried to get this sense of being in tune with nature, we took one step towards this. As we walk, as we sit, as we talk, whatever we do, we are constantly, as far as manifestation is concerned, held within nature. We are never outside nature. There is nothing in the universe, either in material or mental or psychical terms, which is unnatural. The only real meaning of unnatural is to go against the healthy functioning of the psychophysical organism, this living body. That is the only real meaning of unnatural or of supernatural. Supernatural, there is no such thing as supernatural. Nature is the totality as such. See? All right. We get into tune with nature. Now, what are the forms in which we know nature? In the old days, they talked of air, water, fire, earth, ether, as the five elements, as they call them. Today, we don't talk of fire, earth, air, because our modern knowledge has shown us that all these things are the chemical elements. And when we come to still deeper knowledge in recent times, we know that all these chemical elements are only collections and expressions of electrical energy or electromagnetic and so forth. So we talk in this new way about them. Now, when we talk about it as fire or earth or air, it is just a brain activity which is confined to words. We make sounds. But by making sounds, we don't get released from the pictures that those sounds represent. We say a tree, that's an oak tree, or that's a beech tree, or whatever it is. But you see, we are not released into complete relationship with the oak tree or the beech tree. That tree is there, I am here. And I have only made a sound, that oak tree. Now that is not going to bring about my release. If I really look at the tree and look with such complete attention that the idea, the knowledge that I am looking at something other than myself, other than this body, is out of the act of looking, then the act of looking brings the tree and me together. Now you know, you all know from your own experience, how, if you love a particular tree or a flower or something, your whole being goes out to it, doesn't it? And as it goes out to it, you only experience the joy and the happiness of it, but you don't know that your whole being is going out to it. What has happened? Communion has taken place without your knowing it. And that is, of course, the nice part of it, that it has happened without your knowing it. The moment you start analyzing and knowing, now of course my talking is all analysis, but that can't be helped, otherwise we can't talk at all. When it happens without your knowing it like that, without your analyzing it, then it is a true state of union. You and the flower are one. You are the flower is you. And if and when you or I become sensitive enough, in that oneness, the flower will talk to you, it will dance with you. there'll be an extraordinary togetherness, an extraordinary unification. You will have blended like milk and water. And you will know the essence of that flower. You will know not with the brain saying so many words, not that kind of knowledge, but by the sheer act of union. Supposing, for instance, you have been away for some months and you have little children, very little children, and you come back and the children come running up to you and jump into your arms and you hold them in your arms like that. You experience that? I have. When you experience that, you suddenly know. You suddenly experience the reality of communion. There is no separation. Although the children are your children, they haven't become you, you haven't become them, and lost your identity, you're there, but there is communion. So now, similarly, when we go walking out and see and sensitively respond to what we are seeing, without talking, don't talk back at the tree, don't analyze it, you see, just go out to it like that. What happens is that all the particular shapes and forms in the psyche move out of the way. They don't block you. And as they move out of the way, this extraordinary thing which is pure mind, this transcendent reality comes right through your whole body and psyche. Then afterwards, you will talk of it also. Because whenever that happens, it leaves an impression upon the whole organism. An impression which never dies. It grows and grows and grows. And because of that impression upon the brain and psyche, what we call thoughts and words can flow out afterwards. But don't cling to the thoughts and words. Those thoughts and words have their value. You will have noticed how all the religions of the world have presented their particular system of archangels and angels and the constructive forces and the destructive forces, those that build up the cosmos, those that break down the cosmos, and so forth. There is even the phrase, the war in heaven. You know how they have all been given names, and all those names have meanings, have profound, deep meanings. They stand for what the brain and psyche in its present condition can visualize as the perfect, the most wonderful, and so forth. It is a vision of what we ourselves are growing into. So this is what all those names typify, symbolically typify. But they also stand for the reality of this transcendent creative power of mind, of the omnipresent divinity which is permanently here, all the time. They also typify that. So now, when we work through in the kindergarten way, by our contact with nature, with things which we can see and hear and touch and so forth, and release this sensitivity and allow this purity of brain and psyche to grow within, then this communion with mind, with transcendence, continually keeps coming through, coming through. We don't stop it. That is the value of this sort of thing. And when it actually happens, as I've already said, there is the reality of communion. And that is pure meditation in the real sense. So it is not you who are meditating. It is transcendence itself which demonstrates this wonderful phenomenon of meditation, of communion, through you, the instrument of transcendence. If we understand this, out goes all selfishness. It's impossible. There is no self to be selfish about. It has vanished. And it is only in mind, it's only in the deeps of consciousness that self can vanish. Because self, I, a separate self, is only a mistaken idea. I am not a separate self. In actuality, this is not separate. If all of you, if all this world around me were not here, this couldn't exist for a single second. It would die. Think of no air, no light, no earth, no anything else. Where is me? Just impossible. But you see, our delusion, our fundamental delusion of self, which gives rise to the other delusion that all the rest is not self, that's completely out. And it is self, the idea of self and not self, which are the two arch conspirators who weave the net of suffering for mankind. It's those mistaken ideas. And this is how we free ourselves from those ideas. Do remember, just by listening to the words, and if your brain, your intellect merely says, oh yes, I agree with that, I throw out self and not self as ideas. You can't. You simply can't. You think you will have thrown out the ideas, but they are so deeply ingrained in the whole organism that they keep on functioning, although you may say no to them. Supposing I were to say to my heart and my liver, oh no, you are not there. I disown you. Go out. Will they? If they did, that would be the end of me. You see, so you cannot arbitrarily throw these things out like that. You can't do it arbitrarily. You can grow out of it. That doesn't mean that you cast it off like a skin, like the snake sloughs off its skin, you see. You can't do it that way. But that which is already there is transformed, it's changed, so that you have really grown as a whole and come to fulfillment in your being. Is this fairly clear? Because it's important to be able to practice the walking with a mind that is clear upon basic matters. And these are basic matters. You see? So remember, nature supplies is the source from which all the forms raised up in the brain and the psyche come about. And since every human being is only limited, the forms which come about, or which exist in the brain and the psyche, are the result of seeing and hearing and touching and smelling and so forth, all that we do see and hear and touch and smell in the world around us. And the forms which we make are limited expressions of what nature itself is. For instance, there are wonderful mountains and forests and all the rest of it. We say mountains and forests, but we have just a limited picture of them. The whole mountain and all that it contains and all that the forest contains and all the activity and life that goes on there cannot get into my brain and my psychical pictures. I call them psychical pictures because the functioning of the senses is a psychical functioning, rooted in physical processes, chemical, physical processes. See? Is that quite clear? How one becomes released from one's imprisonment.
Now, as we walk up, be quite awake to the fact, be quite aware of all that we see, all the sounds that we hear, the tiredness that we may feel. We breathe a little more deeply, attempting to climb up, you know. Be just aware of it. Don't say no to anything. True meditation means that nothing is excluded. Everything is taken in. This is actually present. So it's no good the psyche saying, oh, I don't like this part, I'll shut you out. It is there, laughing back at us for trying to shut it out. See, this is one of the difficult things. Our likes and our dislikes, and the conflict of the likes and the dislikes, makes the psyche ill. You see? It is so. This is how it is now, at this moment. And if we are just really awake to the whole thing, then we are in tune with it. Then it doesn't harm us. And we don't harm it, which is the most important part. You see? So be aware of what is actually happening without saying no to any part of it. So we'll continue. Feel the silence of the trees. They are just living. The sap rises up, conveying life energy to the whole tree. In the same way, our bodies also have the circulation of the blood. But with us, there is something else. The root of the tree points downwards to the earth, towards the center of the earth, and it comes to an end there. But the brain, which is our root, there is no end to which it points. We are like trees upside down. Or trees are like us upside down. But there's a difference. We can be sensitive to this transcendent totality. The tree is not conscious of it. You and I can be conscious of it. Which is something different. Look how the trees never say no to each other. When they grow very close to each other, the branches don't start fighting with each other for space. They just grow, they just adjust to the laws of nature. They know the happiness of living completely as trees. we have missed the joy and the happiness of living completely as human beings. Now you know, those trees bodily stand separate from us. Of course, that is how nature has made everything individual. But you and I can be sensitive to this flow of life which goes on. Life is a mystery. It's a manifestation of energy whose secret we don't yet know. We don't know it in analytical terms, but we know it because we feel it. If we didn't feel it, we could never love anything in nature. We couldn't love our fellow man. We couldn't love the animals or the grass or anything at all. We could never have joy out of it. The joy which is peaceful. You see how peaceful they are? They are utterly happy. Now when there's a storm, they will move according to their own elastic strength. If the wind is very much more powerful, then they'll just fall down. But they will always be natural. They will never be against the law of their being. Unnatural, in that sense. This is the important thing. And insofar as we are awake to this, you're awake to the fact that this is how it is going on. Whilst we are awake to it, the psyche and the brain do not obstruct transcendence from functioning. The blessing of God is upon everything all the time. The trees and the earth and the stones and the mountains and the air and the sun and the stars, they don't shut out that blessing. Only we do. Because the psyche and the brain are filled with stuff. With a big notice, verboten. See? Well, open the door. Open all the doors and the windows. And then you will discover your real house of life, which is the whole universe for man. For animals and plants and the stones, the earth is the home. But the mind and the consciousness of man can go right beyond the earth to the uttermost confines of space. And that is our home. You know, there's a Christian hymn, isn't there? O God, our help in ages past. And the last line is, and our eternal home. And all this is God. So the nature of God is left to be God when we feel that and see that. We don't say God is so and so. We don't give God a passport and a description, height so much and all the rest of the rubbish. You see, no, God is God. Don't know. And remain in the state of unknowing here. But remain in the state of communion there. And then God will know you personally. It's an extraordinary thing. This energy called mind comes into you and enlightens you. And that is the state of real knowledge. And that is the meaning of the word vidya in all the Indian writings. Vidya, knowledge. Not in the ordinary dictionary sense of knowing how to make roads or build houses or anything like that. But that state of knowing. See? You know how the fourth chapter of Genesis starts with, and Adam knew his wife Eve, and she conceived. What is the meaning of conception in the transcendent sense? What is a conception? Free energy constricts itself. Free energy plays upon itself. And in playing upon itself, it makes a container. It itself is the container. And it itself is the contained. And because of that, there is a manifestation of a particular form. And that is the meaning of conception. And that is what happens with biological conception, with intellectual conception, with transcendent conception. This play of energy. Now in a place like this, this is the marvel, the magic of El Mau, or places, all places like El Mau, that the quietness, the power, the everything that you can think of or be sensitive to is available. It's open for you. No marks to pay for it. No exchange rates are involved. No one is the poor man who can't afford. No one is the rich man who can get what he demands. Isn't it wonderful? The reality of life. And that is the beauty. Happiness. How many we are? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. About 15 or 16 of us here. If 15 or 16 of us can really light up with this, we become amongst men like the stars in heaven, shining. What is the sun but a star? And it's close enough to give us everything that we need. Warmth, light, life, protection, energy, everything. And you see, if that star were removed, all this would disappear into nothing. If each one of us becomes a star like that, transcendentally, what would happen to the human race? Its problems, its quarrels, its miseries, its horrors. Things which are diseased or ill, when the sun shines on them all, it purifies everything, doesn't it? That is the transformation. The sun doesn't need a chemical laboratory to bring about the purification. It itself is its laboratory. And all that potentiality is in us. And all nature, everything around us, is our teacher. Now you see why again and again I say you must not regard me as a teacher. I don't teach anything at all. I don't want any disciples or followers. too much responsibility. But whosoever learns, by the act of learning, confers teacherhood upon the person or the thing or the situation from which he learns. You see why? Learning is not an acquisitive process. You're not acquiring something which you can put into your bank balance or into your pocket or eat or anything. You're not acquiring anything. It is not an acquisitive process. Learning is a growing process, a flowering out of the mind. You don't require anything. What does a bud acquire when it opens out and becomes the flower? Acquires nothing. It has grown into its fulfilled state, flowering, full flowering. And you see the marvel of it. The living process absolutely and continuously includes the dying process. This is very important. Because change, if this is in this condition, when it changes, this condition has died into the new condition. This is very important. But if we have fixed ideas, fixed beliefs, and so forth, we remain in the dead state, fixed, no longer growing. And all this can teach us how to die out of the immediate now into the immediate next living now. So you see, death and life are one and the same thing. Creation, transformation, creation, transformation. Don't cling to the ideas. Get the feel of it. Just be quiet and get the feel of it. Don't try to remember afterwards what was said. Because it is the intensity of attentiveness now which brings about the transformation of the whole psyche and brain.